Let's talk coffee. Hello, everyone. This is Kelly again. And as you know, I always introduce myself as a journalist that brings news from coffee in Brazil. But today is going to be different.
Your podcast with a little bit of Brazilian coffee. Café.
Today, fortunately, I'm not in Brazil because I'm attending SCA Specialty Coffee Expo, and I was lucky enough to be at the Rico Symposium too. And right now I'm recording an episode straight from Seattle. Thanks to your donations via PayPal, I was able to buy my recorder, a very fancy one. And I'm here in front of Peter Giuliano. I'm so glad and a little bit nervous. Welcome.
Oh, wow. Hi. It's nice to be here. And I love the fancy recorder.
So, Giuliano, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Oh, thank you.
I know you're a pretty busy man.
Yes.
And I'd like to start with curiosity. You said in the beginning that the Rico Symposium would call Cafea, right?
Yes, that's right. I had an idea at one point to call it Cafea after the Latin word for coffee, and you stole that idea from me. But
I'm
that's
so
okay.
Good. Yeah,
it
yeah.
Seems
we
like
are
a great.
Together, you're part of this now.
Yes, that's right.
Good.
So I feel a sense of pride now.
For those who never heard about SCA, you don't understand properly, or who is Peter Giuliano, could you describe your experience in the coffee industry?
Well, sure. It's important for me to, when I talk about who I am as a coffee person, to explain that I think of myself as a barista. I started when I was in college working behind the counter at a coffee shop in San Diego, California, making coffee for people. And I got that job because I was a musician and I would play music at night and serve coffee during the morning, I thought my career was going to be a musician.
Oh.
But I fell in love with coffee instead. And one of the reasons I fell in love with it was because I got to perform with coffee in a similar way that I did with music. So like when you're
How is that?
Well, like when you're behind the counter and you're making coffee for people, you have to be engaging and give them an experience along with their coffee. It's not just being a robot serving people coffee. You need to help them understand where the coffee came from, enjoy it a little bit. Usually people in the United States, when they're coming to a coffee shop, it's usually early in the morning. They're a little bit grumpy. They want something friendly and happy and fun with their coffee. You can give them that. And so anyway, I fell in love with that part and I started working in coffee shops, did that and wound up starting a coffee roasting company in North Carolina, which I did for many years. And then I was a coffee buyer and a coffee roaster and ran my business. And years later, I joined the SCA to help run the Rico Symposium, and we can talk more about the history of that later, but now I do that, and I also run research for the organization so that we can learn more scientifically and in terms of sustainability and more data and information about coffee for people.
So you move straight from art to science.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool.
Yeah, and I'm not a scientist, but I love science. I love it because it helps people understand more about the world, and I think that's really important.
Perfect.
The goal of Rico is review, reconnect, revive, research, and renew.
It's one of those stepping stones where you feel like you're really becoming a part of a larger community.
You experience a lot of information, a lot of new people you're going to meet, and then take all that back to your company and work with that. You should come.
Meeting the people who are really driving the industry forward, and that's not just commercially, it's also about, you know, kind of spiritually, if you like, in terms of moving the whole organization and the specialty coffee forward. And that's been the biggest piece for me.
It brings inspiration and creative thinking towards moving forward.
When you get out of that talk, when you put down your notepad that you've been taking notes with and you go and you talk to someone from another company that you've never met and you get their take on it and you see some more ideas start to spin around, that's where the real value of Rico just really starts to show itself.
Honored to be selected as a fellow. There's so much more value in talking to people here and connecting with people who can be your next mentor. They can be taking you to origin. They can be a next best friend.
Let's talk about a little bit of history, because people need to understand about the background,
mm-hmm.
what it is now.
Sure.
So it was created 10 years ago, right?
Yes. Yeah, 10 years ago. And it was because we needed a place in coffee to talk about really important issues, the big issues that affect the coffee industry. And, you know, that may confuse some people because coffee may seem like just coffee, but we actually in coffee are really impacted by things like climate change, for example. As the climate changes, it really affects the places that grow coffee, and it has an effect on the people that grow coffee, the people that work with coffee, and ultimately the people that consume coffee. So we have to have a place where we can talk about the impacts of climate change on coffee. And also social movements, you know, that's important for us to understand, and scientific findings. So we created this conference as a way where we can explore new ideas for coffee. And interestingly, you know, lots of coffee people speak at this conference, but lots of non-coffee people too. We have people from chocolate or from wine or from tea. Yeah, come and talk to us about what's happening in those fields, because we are very similar and connected in that way.
What was the scenario, coffee industry 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And what was the subject in the first edition?
I tell you, the subject that first year was the question of whether higher quality coffee was like a permanent thing or whether it was kind of a trend.
So
which now seems like a silly thing to talk about.
Yes.
But at that first, we had a first round table, and there was somebody who was actually a very important person in coffee, and he was saying, no, there's no way that consumers are
will pay more
in the long
quality.
Term. Exactly. And he said, this is a temporary thing, and we'll probably go back to cheap coffee. And he was wrong. There was another guy that they actually got in kind of an argument over the stage, and it's clear that there was a winner. At that time, companies were deciding whether to fully commit to higher quality, better, more expensive coffee. And it certainly has grown that way. The other thing that we were talking about at that time was larger brands of coffee, you know, whether they were going to invest in better quality coffee. And that's happened too. But what we didn't know, and we didn't talk about at that time, that's been amazing, was the explosion of small coffee roasters. And I think that's happened in Brazil as well, right?
Right now.
Yeah.
10 years.
It's just happening now.
Yeah.
Well, that's really happened in the United States. It's starting about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
And a huge explosion of small roasters. And so I think we started getting the idea that something like that was going to happen 10 years ago. But really, this last decade has been about explosive growth that way.
And the wrong guy, is he working in the industry too?
No, he retired from the industry a while ago. I think he's doing something else now. He just got it wrong and he had to go somewhere else.
And when you started, what were the challenge to organize this kind? Because it didn't exist before. So
that's right.
Who was the crazy one who said, oh, let's do that. Let's talk nerdy about coffee.
Yeah, that was me. At the time, I was on the board of this organization, and a lot of my friends in coffee it was clear that we wanted another kind of conversation about coffee.
Deeper.
A deeper conversation, right, and a more advanced conversation about coffee. And some of the people who you met this week, Nicholas Cho, remember him? He hosted that last session. He's a great person for you to talk to, but anyway, he and I were talking about different things that we might do, and Rick Reinhardt, who hosted the first one, he was very instrumental. Tracy Ging, who was also there. Really, the three of us, Tracy, Rick, and I, really committed to working on this thing together, and we created it that year. And then we had to go out and convince, you know, a couple hundred other coffee leaders to come together and take a chance on this.
And sometimes the work is harder when you try to convince than doing the thing itself, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Lots of energy.
Yeah, and I'll tell you a funny story. Two crazy things happened. It was 2009 when we did this. And remember, the economy in the United States really crashed in late 2008.
Yeah.
And so it was like terrifying. But it was terrifying, but it also made us realize this is exactly the sort of thing that we have to talk about. A major economic shift like this, we need to be able to talk about it. Here's another funny story about we were really nervous when we were first doing the first one.
And
we were having the opening session, and it was in a big ballroom in a hotel. And everybody had come in, and we were just about to start, and then we heard,
a
fire alarm.
Oh, my God.
And it was going, and it wouldn't stop. And I was thinking, oh, no, we're going to have to take everybody out of the building, and we're going to cancel this thing, and it's going to be terrible. And then, but then the fire alarm stopped, and we were able to have the conference. And then by the end, everybody had forgotten that there was a fire alarm. So we thought it was successful.
True. And what was the format? Like lectures, round tables, exercises? How did it work?
Exactly. All of those things. The first thing was a round table that we started with. And then we did a lot of workshops. Like, for example, one thing was we did a business models workshop where everybody brought their business model of their company, mm-hmm. and sat at long tables, and we shared them with each other to see what our different business models look like and how we could learn from one another. We did another one, which was a a modeling thing. We looked at computer models of how climate change was likely to affect the coffee industry. We always do a lot of tasting kind of things because sensory experience is a big part of what we did. So we did. Did you do the sensory exercise this year when you tasted wine and then tasted a piece of fruit and then tasted the wine again?
I arrived the last activity of the first day.
Okay, so let me tell you. This is a magical activity. Can I explain it to you?
Please, please, please.
So if you, this is the exercise that we did the first year. We took a glass of white wine that has a lychee taste. Do you know the lychee fruit?
Yes, fruit,
okay.
Yeah.
So it has a lychee taste to this wine, and you taste it, and you can taste the lychee taste, right? Then you take a lychee, you find a lychee, mm-hmm. and you eat the lychee, and you enjoy it, and you notice its flavor too.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you go back to the wine and taste it a second time after you've eaten the lychee, you can't taste it anymore. You can't taste the lychee anymore.
Oh.
And that's because of a trick that happens in your brain. It's called habituation. So you know when you, if like you walk into a room and it smells like cleaner or something like that, and it's very strong, but then a few minutes goes by and you can't smell it anymore?
Yes.
And then somebody else comes in the room and they say, what smells in here? And you can't smell it anymore?
It's like perfume too.
Yeah, perfume, same
feel,
way.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. You can't smell perfume on yourself. Right. That's called habituation.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a demonstration of that. The thing that matters for coffee people is when we're tasting coffee, right? If we're tasting a bunch of different coffees next to each other, if one of them tastes like lemons, let's say, and that's really great when a coffee smells like lemons. If the next coffee also smells like lemons, we won't be able to tell. So we need to be really careful about these things that happen in our brains that change the way we taste things so we can understand tasting coffee better.
So cupping sections, we need to rethink about it.
That's right. And that's why we start actually after that conversation, we started doing cupping differently where we do multiple tables where we reorganize the orders of coffee so we can avoid being misled by habituation. You can also use this technique in the coffee bar, right? If you serve, and think about this, if you serve chocolate with coffee and somebody eats the chocolate, then they won't be able to perceive the chocolate notes in coffee anymore.
True.
So you might want to be careful about doing that. You know, you can actually manipulate the way people experience coffee by what you serve with it, you know.
Interesting. There is a Brazilian neuroscientist. Her name is Fabiana Carvalho.
I've heard of her, yes.
Really?
I have, yeah. So she's a student of Dr. Spence's, right?
Perfect, yes. And she has a partnership with Ting Wei and Debo too.
Oh, okay.
And I just recorded her in Portuguese, an interview with her. It's pretty interesting. And I will interview in English when she has more results.
Oh, okay.
So I promise you that, okay?
So Charles Spence, the professor she works with at Oxford, spoke at our RICO symposium 4 years ago.
Cool.
Here in Seattle, yeah.
About this kind of study?
About exactly this kind of thing.
Neuroscience, coffee.
Right. They call it his work, and I'm sure, and I think her work too, is about cross-modal sensory experience. And that is, those are things that when you, the things that you hear affect the things that you taste.
True.
And the things that you smell affect what you see, etc. All of your senses are connected. So, for example, one of Dr. Spence's experiments was with yogurt, you know? And he gave people different kinds of yogurt to taste, and they would score how high the quality they thought it was, etc. Except he gave them all the same yogurt. He just gave them different spoons. And if it was a plastic spoon, they scored at the lowest. If it was a heavier plastic spoon, they scored it a little bit higher. If it was a metal spoon, they scored it higher. But if it was a fancy metal spoon, they scored it the highest of all. You know? And so it's these things that affect how people taste yogurt,
coffee too, yeah.
Or coffee or wine.
She's
or
doing
anything.
Something like that, but different cups.
Yeah.
Designed by Ting Wei.
Okay, good.
But can you see that how lost we are right now? We lost the focus.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Sorry, guys. So I want to come at the actual format.
Okay.
So can you describe the actual format?
Yeah. So we have always taken 2 days and have a nice meal in between. And then that's our format. And so, but over the years, we've done all sorts of different things. We were also inspired by TED conferences. Do you know TED?
Yes.
And so we started to do like TED Talks a few years ago and allow people 18 minutes to express their idea. We do, and so a lot of times those are really an important part of the conference. And then we try to find ways to get people talking to one another because that's where you, just like we're doing now, right? You start to...
It's really interesting what happened because it was my first time in RICO. And it was really rich to see the networking.
Mm-hmm.
People were not shy to just introduce themselves. Oh, I do this. How can we help each other? So, oh my goodness, it was worth just for that.
I'm really glad to hear you say that. That's because that's something that we is an important part of our tradition, is that it's not a formal, stuffy conference. It's really about interacting with each other.
And I can see very shy people, professionals, that it's a little bit shy, but they feel comfortable to approach.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting. Yeah. I talked to very interesting people with different backgrounds.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, and that's our hope. And, you know, it's interesting. Over the years, different, because of that thing that happens, lots of things have come out of it. So an organization called World Coffee Research started because of a conversation that two people had in a hallway at this conference.
I see.
You know, another thing... This is a funny thing that happened a few years ago. We were talking about cold brew that year, and these two different owners of two different cold brew companies, Slingshot in North Carolina and Stumptown in Portland, Oregon, they both had cold brew products. They decided, why don't we collaborate? And they introduced a product together that was a national cold brew coffee and cascara product that was really delicious and really successful. So it can turn into magical things when people start to interact with each other.
And sharing, because we can grow together, right?
Absolutely. That's the commitment. That's the idea, is that together, by working together, we can do a lot more than any of us can separately.
And what was the highlights in this edition, in those 2 days?
Well, because it was our 10th anniversary, we thought it was pretty special.
Did you get emotional?
A little bit.
Yeah.
So we reflected back on the previous decade, which was really interesting. We invited a lot of old speakers that we had that we'd done years ago, and that we invited them back to share what's happened since then. Some of the highlights for me, as you know, I'm a little bit of a science geek, so some of the science stuff is really appealing to me. This woman called Selena Ahmed, who's researching the impact that climate change has on tea flavors.
I saw that.
Fascinating,
wow.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was a highlight for me. I think also a lot of the conversations that we're having around diversity and, you know, gender in coffee and ethnic diversity in coffee is really powerful right now.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because Brazil has more than 130 years mm-hmm. dedicated to coffee science.
Right.
That's a fact. But they are looking only to the farms, machinery, genetics, climate change.
Right.
But we are not looking at the other side. If coffee is made by people, for people, well, why don't we look who is holding this cup, who is holding these instruments at labs? So the gender issue is the exercise to looking to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And usually scientists, they don't...
I agree with you completely. And this is why, remember before I talked about how it's important to me to think of myself as a barista. And the uh-huh. reason that is because I remember the human connection that you get with cups of coffee, you know? The thing that I always think about is that when you're making coffee for somebody, it's a special thing, right? Even if it's in your house, you're inviting somebody, you're giving them something that you made for them. It's a moment of connection, and you're just people, being people
exactly.
together.
Exactly.
And so really, I think that, you know, you can say that coffee is about flavor or coffee is about chemistry or whatever, but that's all wrong to me. Coffee is about people, you know, and you learn that. If you work as a barista long enough, you learn that really what you're doing is you're making human connections all the time. And also, you know, you see people come into the coffee shop together, and they're old friends, right? Having a cup of coffee together and making that connection. You realize that your job is not just to make them delicious coffee, although that's a big part of your job, but it's also to create a space for them that they can connect with other people.
To feel safe, to feel comfortable, and then
right.
enjoy.
And coffee shops all throughout history, all the way going back to Europe, to Arabia, and all the way back to the origins in Ethiopia, have always been places where people are welcome to come, you know? So in the United
True.
States, for example, you know, coffee shop is a place, unlike lots of other places, you know, restaurants, hotels, whatever, tend to be very exclusive, you know? But a coffee shop usually isn't like that. Usually coffee is welcoming because it doesn't cost too much to get a cup of coffee,
yes.
you know? It's a public space, so young people are there, old people are there, women, men, other genders, many races, different economic groups can all come together in that space and yeah. interact with each other in a community. And that's really important. And so we need to understand how problems exist. You know, still, we still have problems of sexism and racism in our culture, and those are going to be reflected in the coffee industry. So we have to understand how to make progress on these things if we want our coffee shops to be safe, thriving cultural places and is important for us.
And as a coffee nerdy, do you see lots of research towards this, the people side?
Yeah. So in fact, just a few minutes ago, I was with an anthropologist who's studying coffee communities. Kate Fisher is her name.
She's
studying coffee communities in Latin America. So and especially gender roles in those coffee communities. That's her whole focus. And she's at the University of Boulder in Colorado. But she studies these communities in Honduras and Guatemala.
So she already published some work.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah,
so if you're listening to this podcast, go to the website. I will leave some links to her research.
Yeah.
And also I'm following Sabine Parrish. She's also an anthropologist.
Yep.
And she did a very good job about sexism in coffee shops in the U.S.
Yeah.
Right now she's living in Brazil.
Oh, really?
Lucky me.
Oh, wow.
Until June, because she is doing her doctorate by Oxford, studying how Brazilian consumers understand specialty, because we are isolated.
Yeah.
We have only 14 origins, national origins. So the way an American or European consumer understands specialty is completely different from what we understand.
Oh, sure, I'm sure, yeah.
So it's really interesting.
Sabine actually used to work with us on Rico Symposium for a little while.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
So she's great. I respect her a lot. But yeah, and then I should also mention that the organization I work for, the Specialty Coffee Association, has published some research on gender.
Gender, I saw. I will leave the link in the website too, guys.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Very important to mention, I was really happy to see Isabela Raposeiras on the stage talking about a reality that international community don't think or imagine about Brazil. As an organizer, can you give some thoughts about her speech, why it was important?
Well, it's funny. I met Isabela 4 or 5 years ago because she came to this conference, you know, and she blew my mind. I mean, you know, you don't always meet people with that much energy and that much focus in coffee. But it's funny, I was just talking to a Brazilian coffee scientist called Dr. Flavio Burem.
He's a star.
Yeah.
Everybody knows him.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Burem, please talk to me. I want to record an episode with you.
Well, he and I were just hanging out and with his colleague, Dr. Rosane Schwan, I don't know.
She's another star.
Yeah.
She's talking about microbiology and fermentation.
Yes. So we were talking a few minutes ago and we were talking about how far away Brazil and the United States feel from each other sometimes. You know, it's so expensive to get from Brazil to the United States or from the United States to Brazil. What that means, you know, you mentioned that people in the United States don't always think about Brazil being a vibrant coffee community and we share a hemisphere with, you know, but we don't. And
sad.
And it is sad. And Isabela is a great representative of a vibrancy, a kind of commitment to specialty coffee that most Americans don't identify with Brazil.
My wish with this podcast in English, even with my weird accent, is to connect these communities.
Yeah.
American and the whole world.
Let's hope for that. And because I feel like we have a tremendous amount to learn, not only from Brazil as a coffee producing country, but from Brazil as a coffee culture country. You know, there's very few countries in the world that are as committed to coffee as Brazil is at a cultural level, not just farming level, not just consuming level, at an entirely cultural level. So anyway, I think I agree with you. I hope it leads to some more connections.
I was really glad and surprised what I saw from this edition in Rico. And I'd like you to share some advice. If someone who is listening to this podcast and would like to say, I'd like to do this kind of exercise or this kind of lecture, what are the advice to start this movement in their countries?
Yeah. Well, I can share a small piece of practical advice that a lot of people are doing. So we post a lot of these Rico talks online. Some people in places that are far away, they will get together as a group of people, 5, 10 people, for lunch. I know of a company, Coffee Imports in Minnesota. Every Friday, all their staff can come in the room for lunch and they watch a Rico talk together, and then they have a conversation about it, you know? And because these talks are meant to be triggering conversations in people.
Exactly.
You know?
To compare with their reality, what can we do?
Right.
This is different. Do we agree or not?
Right. So that's a small thing that can happen at a coffee shop or at home or that way. And then I think the next thing after that, so that's using YouTube to listen to somebody's voice that comes from somewhere else. But then there's lots of people in the community that deserve to be heard, you know? And so one thing that I've started doing since I started doing Rico is get together with my neighbors. So now I do a thing with my neighbors where we get together and we have talks. So one person talks about something.
What kind of friends or neighbors do you have?
It's great. But then you learn about, people know things, you know?
Yeah.
Like I have a friend who is a surgeon, and but who knows, you might know somebody who's a doctor or something, but you don't know exactly what they do, and you know, and it's magical. People do amazing things, you know? And so some people know how to do music, so they might play some music, you know? Some people may know how to cook a certain dish, so they can talk about how to cook a certain dish. We had one person came over for dinner, and she gave a talk on how to fold a sheet, because she feels like she's a professional on how to fold a sheet, you know? But these allow you to feel more connected with people that you're surrounded with. And, you know, podcasts and social media make us feel connected in one way with people. But I think it's really also important to be connected physically with people,
true,
too.
Yes.
And so that's my other piece of advice.
It's such an honor to be in this room with all of you. As I look around at so many familiar faces and new ones as my panel gets seated, I realize that this is one of the most important global rooms in coffee. Inside this room are the people who have the ideas and innovation and hopefully the wherewithal to start taking action, because we've had a lot of conversation, but we need to take more action. One of the ways we wanted to do that was to provide a panel where we hear different perspectives. And on this panel, I'm excited because we've got some people that you may have not heard from in the past. So for example, we have Lindsay Bolger, who comes out of a specialty boutique coffee company at Batdorf and then became one of the biggest buyers of coffee with Keurig Green Mountain. We have Phyllis Johnson, who is a specialty coffee trader, who has been a woman entrepreneur who has really dedicated her life to inclusion and diversity. We have Kent Bakke from La Marzocco, who represents the idea of innovation and new ideas and has some strong ideas about what might be the challenges of technology and the importance of human interaction. We have Christine Chondo, who comes from Rwanda, so we can hear producer voices. Christine runs one of the largest gender programs in coffee. And finally, we have Teddy Esteve from Ecom, one of the global largest traders of coffee, a family merchant that has been in coffee for many years. And so this audience now can hear some different ideas, and hopefully they'll speak from their heart and tell you authentically about things that worry them, about that they're excited about, and that we can have a conversation that's a little more authentic than just platitudes.
For the next steps for science, what do you think it's important?
As we talked about at RICO this year, one of the biggest things that's important, we think, is that coffee production has been really stable for many years, whereas coffee consumption is increasing.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And so we don't have a problem promoting. People will drink more coffee automatically. As there's more people in the world, they'll drink more coffee. There's no sign of coffee consumption slowing down. But coffee production.
The opposite, because the Asian market, my
absolutely.
Goodness.
But we need to figure out how to make coffee more profitable for coffee farmers, more sustainable in general, more resilient to climate change. So all of the coffee science should be focused on those things going forward. How to make coffee a better living for coffee farmers, how to make it a better, more climate-adapted crop, and how to make it a better sort of way of life for people on the production side, because otherwise it'll continue to stagnate and we'll be in big trouble. We won't be able to have the coffee that we want in the future.
Do you think in the next edition we can see more scientists, anthropologists, historians? Do you think?
Yeah, yeah. We usually do have a little bit more than we did this year. We were really talking about things, but in fact, I was just I've been talking about that over time here, and there's some really neat people doing really interesting things. And who knows? Maybe we'll just do an all science RICO. I would like that too, but we'll see. But yes, there'll be more scientists in the future too.
Coffee, 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 co